Okay, so our speaker is Bernard from LA. And Bernard, the floor is yours.
Hi, I'm Bernard, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. And although I got sober in Los Angeles, I haven't lived in Los Angeles for 5 years. I did live there for 40 years, though. I live in a town above Sacramento called Yuba City, and that's where my partner grew up, near here, in a little place called Wheatland. And it's the kind of town where there's a church on every block, and everyone thinks that once they get to Alcoholics Anonymous, they have to go back to their church or their youth. Now, that's not my experience because there wasn't a church in my youth. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and I grew up in the I was born in the 50s and I came of age in the 60s. And the period of time where most historical epochs are considered as far as modern culture goes are the middle of the 60s to the middle of the 70s. And that was the period of time I was a teenager. And also the not to be political, but the looming of the draft of the Vietnam War was hanging over my head, as well as the threat of nuclear annihilation, which is perhaps still pertinent. But I don't, there's three things I don't want to discuss, they're the three things that I think I have no place in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. One is what I personally believe as far as finding or what I personally believe as far as the spiritual belief system. I think it's a personal journey that we should afford anyone. Who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. Since Alcoholics Anonymous was born out of a religious context, Abby got sober because Roland Hazard got him from the clutches of the courts. And Abby got sober and brought the message to Bill on his kitchen table. And Bill, was a as an agnostic at that point. That's how he identified himself. And he felt that people who had religion were off base. And then he had some experiences, but I'll talk about that later. And I will talk about me, not Bill. But the point is that Abby got drunk and Bill didn't. Bill got sober and stayed sober because he felt it was an inward journey. And so I think that I digress. There are three things I shouldn't talk about: my politics, how I vote, what I believe. I don't consider myself an atheist or agnostic, but I do not have an anthropomorphic deity having anything to do with reality or my sobriety. The third thing is what I used to do for a living. I think those are the only outside issues as far as my alcoholism is concerned. Sometimes my alcohol was powder form. Sometimes I smoked it. Sometimes I injected it. It didn't matter. It had the same effect. I couldn't get that. I didn't get that. I thought I was not a candidate for Alcoholics Anonymous because, eventually I made myself a candidate for Alcoholics Anonymous quite clearly because I was drinking to quit other things. And that didn't turn out great. A lot of my story. How long do I talk? because I'll set a timer. I don't want you guys to just hear me drone on and on. Let's see, I'll set it for 15 minutes. That's far enough from how long I've talked already, so that everyone has a chance to share themselves. So I'm not a specialist. My alcoholism, in my experience, it didn't matter what my sexual orientation was, didn't matter what I believed or didn't believe. It didn't matter what I used to replace it. It all had the same ultimate effect on me. Anything that alters me from the neck up, for me, is a for me. You know, I guess there are some people who have moderation management, and you know, I don't need to work anyone else's program. I don't need to. My experience with my alcoholism, my experience with my recovery, it's just mine. I'm no authority. I'm not a specialist in recovery. I am a specialist in alcoholism. And what I mean is, well, someone else was saying that I have a lot of experience with alcoholism. I don't have a lot of experience with psychology and certainly religion. I reject, frankly, I don't know about religion. I'll get political if I talk about those things too much. And that's not the point. The point is, I started drinking in the 60s, and I continued drinking until I was 32 in the 80s. And I had had a worse physical bottom, the bottom that I had that brought me eventually to Alcoholics Anonymous in desperation. You know, I had been to a few meetings and they just did look like a religious cult to me. It's not something I wanted to, that's my cat playing with the blind, if you're hearing that sound in the background. She's pretty rambunctious cat. Anyway, I started drinking in the 60s. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the physical bottom wasn't as bad as it had been before. I was, but the emotional bottom was great. I didn't like who I'd become. I didn't like the things I was doing. And I knew that, no matter what I took that altered me from the neck up, it would either bring me back to a substance that was more toxic, or it just the behavior that I was starting to display. I didn't know about my sanity or my emotional well-being. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because, although I thought you guys were religious nuts and some of you just plain nuts, I knew you were staying clean and sober. And that you seem to have a formula for that. Look at, this is what I get every day with this cat. I don't know if you can see him, see her. Anyway, you know, I gravitated toward a meeting in West Hollywood called the Drug and Alcohol Center Midnight Meeting. And they were pretty iconoclastic. And that felt like a better fit than some of the meetings that seemed pretty dictatorial and relied greatly on what appeared to be doctrine to me. And I'm no fan of doctrine. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to become religious. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sober. And that's what I got. This meeting, Drug and Alcohol Center, in I think it was in my first year, but I'm not certain because, it's back in 1988, so I can't remember so greatly. I have stayed sober since December 8th, 1988, incidentally. But that's not, this isn't time anonymous either. I never want to get too many years and not enough days. I renew my commitment to my sobriety daily. I stay sober one day at a time because I can't stay sober for a lifetime. I don't know if I'll get loaded tomorrow. I don't plan on it, but I never planned on it before when I did get loaded. I know. So they railroaded me into this service position of a general service representative. And at these really boring area assemblies, I met this man who was 20 years clean and sober, and his name was Charlie Polachek. And he had started meetings in the Los Angeles area called We Agnostics. And it was a joke because the chapter We Agnostics is a bait and switch where you can have you can use the group for a while, but eventually you're going to come to an anthropomorphic deity as your higher power. And he even talks about the spirit of the universe, and then that spirit of the universe ends up being, a white man. I don't know why it's always got to be a man either. I mean, I don't know why it has to take that form, up in the sky or something. I don't have any imaginary friends up in the sky or any imaginary foes down in the ground. I don't have, that's not part of my belief system. It's not anything I do to get and stay sober. But that's just me. If you do, I don't want to offend you. You're welcome to whatever belief you like. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I've found that it's not important what we believe, but it is important what I do. And what I do is make a personal when it talked about, there's a few things in the big book that I do adhere to, but not like doctrine. I just found them to be truths for me. One is that conceding to my innermost self that for me, I'm biologically and perhaps emotionally and mentally, but biologically different than people who aren't alcoholic. There are people who are able, like I said, to have a couple gummies and call that California sobriety. That works great for them. My biological makeup, that won't work. I know that from my own experience. And I'll end up at the heroin dealer in no time, trust me. And so so I'm biologically different. So this man, Charlie Polachek, I asked him to sponsor me because I had no idea what these steps were about or how to work them. And he said, sure. And he used to say, as an atheist, there's no step I haven't, I can't work the same as somebody who believes. And that intrigued me. And I asked him to take me through the steps. And on the first go round, I said, well, what do I do about 2, 3, and 11? He said, set them aside. Don't worry about them. Let's start on this fourth step. And that's what I did. And I got a lot of information about how I thought, what motivated me. This isn't about getting good. This isn't about getting perfect. It talks about perfect adherence. None of us have it. What we have is our ideals of being comfortable in our own skin. And that's what I found. I've been reading this book, The Spirituality of Imperfection, and I quite like it. I can relate to the concepts in it about it doesn't matter like doctrine, where you have to adhere to some kind of anthropomorphic deity, and or else be doomed to Dante's Inferno. That never appealed to me. I don't believe that that's remotely true. I think that that's mass control, but again, I'm getting political, aren't I? Anyway, the point being that eventually I did was able to work 2, 3, and 11 in a way that works fine for me, for the unsuspected inner resource that I found for me. And that unsuspected inner resource has held me through times in my sobriety, through death, through divorce, through child custody battles, life, job losses, moreover, job raises, job promotions, getting degrees. It doesn't matter. I drank for every occasion, and I did drink or use daily from the time I was about 14 to 32. So it's pretty, I don't want to call it a miracle, but it is miraculous that I'm still clean and sober. It's an amazing thing. It impresses the hell out of me. And all I had to do is a few simple things. The other thing that's probably important for me to mention is way before I met Charlie, somebody had explained to me this idea of sobriety priority. And that's the concept that my sobriety is in one column. There's not drinking. And then everything else is in the other column. So, whether someone cuts me off on the 405, whether somebody is, has fascist attitudes, whatever the case may be, whatever I think the problem is, the sobriety priority comes first. I don't think about it. And what I normally do is take some steps to see what it is that's bothering me about a particular incident, person, or thing, or institution. And once I'm able to right size my experience with that, everything becomes manageable. Now, I don't know about my life being unmanageable or any of those kind of, there's a lot of writing that's in the big book that comes from the Oxford group. And again, they were talking about ideals, and there were more than just Bill's voice writing that manuscript, and Jim Burwell was one of them. And Jim Burwell made sure the words were inserted as we understand him. Again, it had to be him. I don't know what that's about, but that opened the doors for everybody that could possibly suffer from alcoholism to get and stay sober. And that's the whole point. The whole point of anything I'm doing here at 5 a.m. Now it's 5:21, is that in my time, the whole point is that if I talk about this, if I hear myself say the authentic truth that I can best articulate it, then I'm able to face myself and sit comfortably in my own skin and my own reality. I'm not running away from reality, and I'm not running away from my feelings today, for the most part. And well, not even just for the most part, I'm not. And I really do have, I identify as a grateful recovering alcoholic because I really am grateful that I'm clean and sober today. And I think, let's see, I think I've talked long enough, and I'm going to open it up for everyone else that's there. Thank you for having me leave.